Good afternoon, dear followers of Dearborn Blog, and welcome to another episode of We Are In This Together. My guest today is Olga Gufton. Olga, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Olga is a marketing professional that helps her clients with marketing strategy development, websites, and branding. She's a volunteer also for ALATRA, International Public Movement Organization, Project Creative Society, a global project run by volunteers from more than 140 countries with a goal to find out how do we envision a creative society where everyone is happy and lives a fulfilled life in all spheres of life. This project is an answer to the consumerism format of society we live in right now. It's based on 8 foundations of a creative society. 1, human life. 2, human freedom. 3, human safety. 4, transparency and openness of information for all. 5, the creative ideology. 6, development of personality. 7, justice and equality. And 8, self-governing society. During an informational stage of the project, Olga co-hosts live conversations on ALATRA TV, connecting people around the globe under one goal to have a better society for all of us to enjoy. A society where everything is done for people, not against. A society that is united by love and not separated by fear. We strongly support creative cooperation between different people across the planet, regardless of their place of residence, social, national, political, or religious affiliation. That's what the group says. We Are In This Together is an unscripted live non-profit broadcast by Dearborn Blog, hosted by me, Wissam Sharafuddin, to have conversations that become oral history records of our lives during the COVID-19 pandemic, also known as coronavirus pandemic. These are personal stories of our lives during these unprecedented social isolation measures in a globalized world. Again, Olga, welcome.
Thank you so much, Wissam.
So I started this in early March, or mid-March, when we started isolation, and we had no idea what's going to happen next. Unfortunately, we still don't know what's going to happen next. For the record, it is July 14, 2020. We are in the pandemic, since the pandemic is measured by the number of cases, we are at 13.2 million cases worldwide, 3.48 million cases in the United States, and Michigan, where we are right now, 78,000 cases. Pretty much the state is still in a partial lockdown. Things started to open cautiously. Still, it is not clear whether things are going to open or we're going to retract back to closures.
Right.
So this is where we are right now. There's a lot of confusion in the world. There's a lot of solidarity in this struggle. This has changed us for sure and changed the world. It has brought a lot of good things, and it has enlightened us to a lot of the shortcomings in our society.
Yes.
And the strengths of our society. We're going to talk to you about that, with you about that, and we're going to also ask you personally, how did this change you? But before that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up? Where were you born? Where did you grow up? And what do you do now?
Sure. So I was born in Russia, and I pretty much grew up there till the age of 16. And then at 16 years old, my father had a contract job, and he came to work for Wayne State University. And he didn't want to leave a teenager behind, which I totally understand now being a mom. So when he brought me here, and my mom as well, so we stayed here with him, and I went to high school here, and I graduated Baker College, and then I moved on to my professional career, and then now I'm happily married with 2 kids and a dog and 2 cats. So, I kind of live an American life now, and this is my home, definitely. This is where I come back to, and I have traveled the world a little bit, but not, you know, to the extent. And now we are kind of, like you said, you know, stuck at home and rethinking the realities that we are facing today.
When you immigrated from Russia, did you go visit often, or was that just a one-way immigration?
When we came here, first time I did was able to go back for a summer and spend summer back home. And even 1 year of being and living in the United States have shown me that there's so many more opportunities here in the United States than there was back home in Russia at that time. And I really enjoyed going into graphic design, and I really felt like I had a drive for it. And my teachers were telling me, you're so talented. So after a year being in high school and then merging to different, you know, culture and the system, I really recognized that if I am to go back to Russia and finish high school, I would lose a year of school. So I decided to, you know, stay here and continue my education in the graphic communications and web design field. And that has been, you know, a driving force for my career. And I'm very thankful for the decisions I have made. But yes, I have been back since then several times. I haven't been back with my kids yet, but my kids speak Russian fluently, and we do have grandmas here. So we are kind of a household that, you know, switches between the English and Russian language. So it's always fun.
So when you came from Russia, did you speak English?
Unfortunately, I thought I did till I came here. And the reality was that I only knew a couple words, and they didn't take me far. So it almost like felt like I was starting over, because my English was British English, and it was just a couple phrases and a couple, you know, sentences, but it wasn't a fully on language I could use in my free speech. So I would have to say, like, I started almost from the beginning, and I really, you know, was able to catch up fast, and I graduated high school and I even was able to be an honor roll student and also receive some scholarships to attend college.
This reminds me when I went to France, and I was studying French for 2 years before then, and I felt confident, you know, before traveling. Once I got there, I discovered that I don't know French at all. And to tell you the truth, there's some research. I mean, this is good to be bilingual and having multiple languages. And I am bilingual myself, at least with Arabic and English. But also there's other research that shows that if there's a certain age where it's not worth it to try to become fluent in another language.
Interesting. What is that age?
No, I mean, like, there's a certain point where it becomes really harder to become fluent in another language. So the effort that has to be invested has to be essential. It's not like a hobby, you know. It has to be essential to speak that language, to spend that effort. Otherwise, it's not really something that is easily done. I don't know. Some people find it easy, but
I agree. But I still get to keep my accent, because I did come here when I was a teenager. But some of my friends that I know that came here when they were maybe like 11 or 12 years old, that's a different story. They don't have an accent, and it's much easier for them. So I do agree. There is some kind of, you know, age that, you know, breaks our voice or makes us be, you know, a native to the country I was born in.
So now your children speak fluently Russian. Do they also write and read?
My children speak Russian fluently. My little boy is 3 years old and my girl is 6. So she is reading Russian with grandma. That's her little tasks that they do together, that special bonding that they have. And my little guy is 3 years old, so no, he's not reading anything. Oh, yeah. Yes, just yet.
Yeah. So because, you know, we struggle in the Arab American community, we struggle to teach our kids Arabic. And mm-hmm. we don't have much success stories, by the way. We don't have Arab American kids growing up in this country or growing up outside the Middle East speaking Arabic fluently. Very rarely do we succeed in that. And I'm not sure if it is if it's about the language itself or the environment. So can you, like, just tell us a little bit, how did you succeed in making them really fluent in both languages?
You know, I think my success comes from me marrying a husband that speaks Russian. So that helps. Even though he's Ukrainian, he still speaks Russian. So mm-hmm. we speak the language at home. And then both of our grandmas are around us and they speak the language. They don't speak much of English, but they do speak the language. And then some of the, you know, things that we do or friends that we have, we speak the Russian language and it's just easy for them to pick up. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case when, you know, they continue going to school and continue doing that, but we'll make our best effort because for me, I have really seen a benefit of having a dual language advantage, I guess, and I hope that they will see the same.
So do you like make them watch some Russian kids programs or they watch the English ones?
Right now, they watch actually the same programs I grew up on almost 34 years ago. Okay. Because what I find is that some of the cartoons had more meaning in them and they had more moral to the storylines and they didn't have as much violence as the current cartoons have. So I'm very selective of what I let my kids watch. And sometimes, you know, there's Lego videos, but if it's Lego videos, it's still in Russian, right?
So are they exposed to like a regular cable or no?
We do not watch TV in the house. We don't have a cable television, and it's for a reason because A, it's expensive, B, we don't have time to watch it, and C, there is not really a value in it that we personally see as a family, and the information out there is more negative than positive.
Yeah, so we try to do that too, but sometimes, you know, once they discover the other programs, they, you know, it would be very hard to compete.
Yes, you know, I agree.
And graphics, and I used to do the same thing. So I have programs that I've grown up with, and I used to let my kids watch it. But if you let them discover the other shows, and the other shows are made with very modern graphics and very speedy and very sporadic, I feel like it programs their brain in a different way that they start seeing the other programs as boring.
Yes, I agree. Yes, that we used to have cartoons that were a little bit less entertaining and a little bit moving at a slower speed than cartoons now because we can see the attention span is very short with kids and kids are able now to grab an iPad and pick a show they want. Which I personally don't even own an iPad, so my kids don't have access to iPad or any technology to pick their own things. And when we do watch cartoons, it's, you know, maybe once a day where they have, you know, a little guy picks the show and then a girl picks the show. So it's kind of like structured in a way, but we also had maybe 2 or 3 days in a row where we didn't watch anything. Or sometimes when we go and, you know, rent a cabin or we go camping, we don't watch anything. And I don't think kids are really, you know, suffering at that point.
Yeah. Before we go to some of the personal questions, Olga, also we want you to talk to us a little bit about the Alatra program. This is a very interesting organization. I've had an interview with you before that was posted on Alatra TV. It's a very interesting organization. I don't think it is, we hear about it much. So it is an opportunity through Dearborn Blog to hear about this very interesting organization that's doing great work.
Yes, definitely. So for me, my friend actually introduced me to the Alatra International Public Movement, and I was helping some of the project on Alatra TV. And she one day just said, you know, Olga, we need a news reporter for urgent news. There was, you know, some kind of earthquake somewhere and we got a report on it. And I thought, oh, this is cool. Okay, I never done this before. So we went to the park and, you know, she had a camera on and I was talking into my phone because we didn't have a microphone and we were reporting on this earthquake that happened. And then when I was watching the show that they have put together, it looks like, you know, people from all over the world are actually reporting current news. And I'm like, huh, this is interesting because it's not coming through the media. It's coming from the, you know, people themselves. So, and you know how the sometimes media would twist things around a little more than it needs to be. So that's how I got involved. And then some of the other projects, and I know we took an interview with you for the project Universal Grain, and that was the project where we have done interviews around the globe to find out, you know, what unites us all and what really brings us closer together and what internal best qualities every human being has and what morals drive us to do good in this world. And I know you have been a wonderful guest and that, you know, interview is amazing. So I do recommend anyone going on Alatra TV English channel and looking into that interview. But Alatra International Public Movement has started about 5 years ago. That's why people don't hear about it. But now we are very loud and we are coming on and doing a lot of things daily to let people know that this type of platform actually exists. And what this platform does, it unites people from all over the world. It unites people without any conditions. So it's outside politics, outside religion, outside of age, outside of, you know, any type of living conditions or any type of status, where people can openly and freely talk about Creative Society, which is a new project on the platform of International Public Movement. And this project was started because we had a conference last year in May of 2019. And we're supposed to have another conference this year, but obviously got canceled due to COVID. But last year we discussed, the conference was called Society the Last Chance, and we discussed the problems that we are facing right now as a civilization, as a global society. And the problems we have discussed is, you know, that we have an official doomsday clock that tells us that we're going to die because of the either nuclear weapons or a climatic event. And we only have, you know, 60 seconds till 12, and 12 midnight represents like full on destruction of our society. And there's seven scientists that run this doomsday clock, an official doomsday clock for our civilization, and pretty much dictate to us that, hey, you guys are going to be destroyed because you can't get along. You see wars, you see separations, you see everyone after the prophets. So basically, we live in this consumeristic type of format that is a dead end for our civilization. So with the interviews like we took from you and other people around the globe, and everybody kind of voiced their opinion of, hey, you know what? I want to live in peace. I want to live in harmony. I want to have love, kindness, compassion surround me. But in reality, I don't see it. So if we want to live in this peaceful world that everyone can enjoy and be happy in, how do we create it? So the project Creative Society was born. And the first stage right now, as you mentioned, is informational stage. So at the informational stage, we have to let everybody around the globe know that this project exists. Because if you don't know this project exists, how can you know there is, you know, even an alternative to the current consumerism format? And the current consumerist format is nothing new to us. It's been around for about 6,000 years. And historically, you know, we always had wars, we always had separations, we always had some kind of conflicts. And consumers type of format is a format where everybody is hungry. Everybody, you know, don't have enough of anything. And it's basically, you know, some of the basic needs are not even met. So this is the consumer type of format. Where creative type of format is the format where everybody has a fulfilled life. Everyone has everything they need in all spheres of life. And it cannot happen because, you know, someone decides to make it happen and everybody can join. It can only happen when we all around the globe know about this project and we can say, you know what, this really is a goal for our civilization and is to come to the format of a creative society and for us to actually start enjoying our life and, you know, stop the rat race 9 to 5, stop the rat race to impress your neighbor, stop the rat race to, you know, go on someone else's head to achieve something in your life just to figure out that it wasn't enough. So to stop this, you know, chase to nowhere, we created this project, Creative Society, and people around the globe share their opinions and kind of their vision for a creative society. And again, we can't just build it and say, this is the society we're all moving towards, just join us. We can't do that. We together as people have to actually come together and say, you know, this is what we want and this is how we're going to achieve it in a creative way possible, not for profits, but for people. So this is like a scope of the project that we are working on right now.
Yeah, so Olga, so Alatra is an international public like association of people. It's made up of membership, right?
It's actually very interesting. It's a perfect example of a creative society because in a Alatra public movement, we only have volunteers. So we don't have one paid position. We don't collect donations. We don't collect money. Everything is done by people for people. And there is no, you know, we don't have to answer to anyone because we actually answer to humanity. So that makes us very different that we don't have any type of power. We don't have any type of board of members. We only have volunteers, active participants that want to do good in the world and they just act towards it. They take personal responsibility in the areas they're comfortable in, or they can learn a new skill like, you know, live streaming or taking interviews or going live like we're doing today. And then just using this skill, new skill or the skill they already have for a betterment of the society.
So is it associated with any belief system as far as religions?
No, Alatra International Public Movement is outside of any religions or politics. Now, we do have people that are volunteers from all different type of religions. And we also have some people that are in politics and actually, you know, implementing some of the creative society concept into the politics where they are. So basically, the idea is that everyone can make a difference where they are, if we are united by one goal. And one goal is to build a creative society we're all proud of.
Awesome. When was this movement established, as far as the history of this movement?
Yes, I believe, I believe it was established in 2005, but I'm not sure. We have to look at the website. I know I joined it about 4 years ago myself. So I'm more active now participating in some of the projects. As you said, I'm hosting some of the conferences and I'm hosting live conversations. So the project started out and then so it kind of grew into this creative society. It wasn't originally something that we were thinking we need because we had to figure out, so what is the root cause of why we're seeing so much conflict in the world? Then we had to figure out what do people really want and what unites us all. And then we had to figure out, okay, so in order to get to the society where everybody is dreaming of, we have to work together. It cannot be something like, you know, one country builds, another country builds, and then I'll join it. It doesn't work that way. No one can actually, you know, build anything because that has been done before. And we don't need another revolution. At this point, we need an evolution. And evolution comes from, you know, doing things that are different from they used to be, because what used to be is basically not working for us.
Great. So would you mind maybe we can play the video from the Creative Society?
Yes, let's play the video. It might be about 20 minutes long, but we can at least play two, three minutes.
Okay. I didn't know how long is it, but let's just take a look and then our audience, if they're interested.
Like to welcome everyone to the event, the Universal Grain Society, The Last Chance. This unique event is the first of its kind, uniting thousands of people from all over the world in live communication for the first time in human history. And this is being conducted on the platform of Alatra International Public Movement.
Yeah, so our audience, this is available on this website. So if you're interested, anyone who's watching this, to get more information about this project, please go to this website to see it. Olga, how is this organization funded?
Right now, everything is done by people themselves. So if you want to do a project that, you know, we need a camera for, or if we need the project that we need, you know, equipment for, or if we need to send out a press release, people just, you know, kind of pinch in their own money to do it. There is no like a specific way. No one is asked to do anything. It is not, you know, public information of how much money you will give or how much you will not give, because sometimes giving is not equals money. Most of the time it equals effort. Most of the time it just equals action steps. So sometimes you might know about the project and you might be all behind it, but unless you told your neighbor about it and unless you let someone else know that we have, you know, an alternative to consumeristic type of format, then, you know, you have not done your job, right? So that no money can do that for you. We still have to communicate. And this is why this platform is like an open communication platform. We can honestly say things that are really, you know, bothering us and how we can fix it and how we can change it. And we have so many talented people around the globe that are already doing amazing projects. And we have met so many people that are just driving this world in a better direction, but we are not all connected yet. So what I always say is that evil is very well organized and you don't even have to go look for it. It will find you. But when it comes to good and good example and motivation and anything that you really, really want, like your soul food, you have to dig for it. You have to look for it in alternative sources. You have to, you know, go read a book. You have to go watch a video that's not on CNN. You have to, you know, search it out. And our goal is actually to unite all the good on this planet Earth so we can build this creative society together with all the active participants around the globe that don't even know that they already been a part of a creative society by doing good things into this world.
I've seen in one of the eight methods, self-governing society. Mm-hmm. Now, let me put them on the screen 1 second.
Yes, go ahead, bring it up on the screen and we can read it.
Yeah, okay. And so the first one is human life.
Correct.
Okay, if I zoom in a little bit, does it look bigger?
Yes, perfect. Yes, so the first one is human life. And why it's the first one is because right now, we say, you know, human life matters, we say Black life matters, we say, but in reality, it's not about the life should not matter, life should be number one. It should be the highest value that we as civilization hold true. And that if it's implemented, then you know that your life is so valuable that you will not do anything ever. No violence, no, you know, wars, no separations, no, like not even a bad, you know, bad idea or bad thought about another person, because you value your own life as you value life of others. So this is why human life is a number one foundation.
So number one is human life, and number one, two is a human freedom. Is a lot of, you know, I've thought always about needing the, you know, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the United Nations Declaration for Human Rights. It's 27 points. And if we were to condense them into smaller points, I think a human life will take 2 or 3 articles in it. And human freedom will also take a few articles in it. Human safety, scientific, industrial, technological activities of the society should be aimed exclusively at improving the quality of a human life. Transparency and openness of information. This is a very important and modern concept. Yuval Noah Harari speaks about it in his book Homo Deus, about the data and dataism. Says that the flow of data is an essential value of the future.
Yeah, so there needs to be. Can you imagine, like, if we right now hiding information from the taxpayers, we're hiding information from, you know, people that are, you know, watching something, we're twisting information around. And we all live in this fear of the unknown because of, you know, something is being hidden from us. The information is not being revealed to us in a truthful, factual way. It's actually being twisted and spin around for us, and we don't even get an opinion. We just getting fed what is being fed, right? So when all the information is open and transparent, we cannot have corruption. We cannot have any money hidden in some kind of banks offshore. We all gonna know where, you know, as a taxpayer in the United States, we kind of know where the money is going, but they're going to war, right? So the money we are actually investing is we're investing it into nuclear weapons. And we're going back to, are we gonna kill each other with those nuclear weapons? So are we creating this, you know, world of fear of, you know, who is gonna, you know, press the red button first? We shouldn't be able to do that. Like, there should be an agreement with all the countries that, you know, the tax money, the taxpayers' money are actually going for the benefit of society around the globe. And this way, we will not have any hunger problem. We will not have any, you know, type of food shortage. We will not have any problem, you know, with people not living in comfortably, or like receiving some type of, you know, medical treatment or some type of education that they deserve. So that's, I agree, the transparency and openness of information will keep us all, you know, looking forward to the future, not being afraid of the future.
Right. And that's something that is being forced on us, whether we like it or not, whether governments are, closed, they want to be fascist or they want to be democratic. They're forced for transparency and openness by the flow, the internet revolution, and the flow of information and WikiLeaks, etc. The creative ideology should be aimed at popularizing the best human qualities and stopping everything that is directed against the human. The main priority is the priority of humanity, high spiritual and moral aspirations of a human, humanness, virtue, mutual respect, and strengthening of friendship. Creating conditions for the development and education of a human with a capital H, cultivating moral values in each person's society, prohibition of propaganda of violence, condemnation and denunciation of any form of division, aggression, and anti-humane manifestations.
Yes, that's very important. And I know that right now we live in the, you know, the media world, and it surrounds us everywhere. And sometimes you even see some, you know, movies we watch or something, and you become so numb to the violence that around us, then you think it's okay, or like I think it's okay, you know. But in reality, any type of violence or something against people should not be advertised, and we should not be immune to any type of, you know, things that are aimed against human beings and the best nature of them.
Development of personality, you include in it the right for education, mm-hmm. and justice and equality. It includes a lot of points and about citizenship of Earth. Also, it talks about labor. That's something also United Nations Declaration of Human Rights talks about, the right of humans to have a job, to have labor, to have a secure income.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in the universal basic income?
I believe that if we are all born in the, you know, on the planet Earth, and, you know, someone got lucky and was born in the United States. Well, lucky is, you know, in quotes. I don't know how lucky that is. But someone was born in Africa and they don't have food on the table. So every single person that was born here was born for a reason. And every single person needs to deserve some kind of basic, basic support. So we should have some type of, you know, income that everyone receives around the globe. We should have some kind of housing options that everyone receives around the world. Same with education, same with, you know, healthcare. Like right now in COVID, we're realizing that in the United States, we don't even have public healthcare. We don't even have ability to, you know, to fight this coronavirus. And everyone is looking at the United States as a leader in, you know, in everything. But we also have to recognize that we as a leader have shortcomings and we have to work on things as well. So yes, I believe that, you know, everyone deserves like a nice social package to come with their birth. And then this way, you know, if there is not going to be any crime because everyone's going to have the same things, right? But all of a sudden you want, you know, you have a house, but you want a bigger house, then at that point you have to work, you know, for it. So basics is basic, but if you want some nicer things or you want to do something else or you want to, you know, use your money some other way, there should be opportunity for people to make more than the basics. And also, like you said, like if it's a doctor, obviously the doctor will make more money, but also have the basic package.
Now, universal basic income as a concept has been talked about for a while, since the 60s or 70s.
And there got to stop talking and we got to take action. Yeah. We got to actually put it in place.
There has been some experimentation with it in some Scandinavian countries. There was some also experimentation at a smaller level in San Francisco. When you talk about the United States, it will cost anywhere between $32 to $33 trillion. So it will take cutting off a lot of the other budgets.
But you know what? Right now we are talking about this foundation without seeing the number one foundation implemented. So we can't like skip foundations over, right? Once the first one is implemented, then everything else is just like going to fall into place, because now we're not going to look at people as numbers. We're not going to look people as, you know, as someone, a workforce. We're not going to look at people as, you know, unhuman type of things. We will actually say, you know, every single human being deserves, who was born here, deserves a life of fulfillment. And this is, as a global society, this is how we're going to support it. And again, it's just my personal opinion based on what, you know, I have been exposed to and based on the some of the, you know, conversations I had with people and how they look at things this way.
So is the vision of the society or the movement to have some sort of like a federalism all over Earth, like all Earth united in a federal way, or how is it? Maybe the self-governing society will explain
it more. Yeah, sure. I can explain the self-government society. So basically right now we know that there is a lot of power and dictatorship around the world. And sometimes you say, you know, I have this freedom of choice, but at the end of the day, we have, you know, most powerful people around the world deciding for us what we actually going to do, or someone is just going to dictate the way you live. So in a self-governing society, the power is really goes back to people. So that means if we as people say that, and I've been using this example, I don't know why, but I've been using this example. So we establish that a banana is a banana and it's going to cost $1 in every country around the globe. And it's going to be, you know, accessible 365 days at that price. So we establish that, we voted for it, right? And then someone else comes in and says, hey, let's vote for bananas to be $2 a piece and, you know, let's make this happen. And then people all of a sudden go, wait a second, I don't want to vote for it. So, you know, at that point, you really want to vote for something, right? Because it concerns you, because all of a sudden your bananas are more around the globe and we already have, you know, an infrastructure in place where they are a dollar everywhere. So at that point, we recognize, first step, you're going to say, okay, well, who wants bananas to be $2? And who is looking for personal gain here? And who is after profits? Let's figure this out so this doesn't happen anymore, right? Because we as a society globally have voted on one decision. And those decisions can change, of course, but going from $1 to $2 is probably unreasonable because we no longer have inflation. So this is the type of, I guess, an example of self-governing society. Now, the government does not go anywhere. The government takes on more responsibility. They take power. So the government is actually stays in place because it's a tool that has been used for such a long time. And then now they just have to adjust their, you know, some of the things that they write. It has to be like, if we're taking a vote, The writing on a ball, I don't know, it's going to be a cell phone or how we're going to vote online. That writing has to be mainstream where I'm reading it and I can understand what I'm voting for. So right now there is a lot of, you know, hidden clauses and there is hidden agendas in something and you don't even know what you're voting for anymore. And some people just choose not to vote because it's so confusing to vote for anything. So on the government side, it will be now they will be responsible for transparent information and information that doesn't have hidden agendas.
So the vision of the movement is not to create one government or, you know, unite in one country, but just to adopt these values by all the governments that are existing.
Correct.
Have a more collective consciousness of governance instead of unite ones.
Correct. Okay. And then we also have to have some governing bodies, right? So if this government decides, you know, I'm going to run my government by the ways of creative society, but they don't go by the rules, we have to have some kind of, you know, governing body where they say, you know, you promised one thing, but we're not seeing it. Apologize.
No problem. take a break, Olga. Have some water, please. I'm sorry I made you talk a lot. I know you were online live today.
Yes, that's my third broadcast of the day, so I've been talking.
Yeah, I thought I'm overdoing this, and until I heard what you do. So I just want to end about Alatra saying that what are some of the strategies used in the movement to achieve its goals? Is it only education, or do you also like push some candidates to run for office? Do you lobby? Do you have like a political wing to your movement where you lobby various governments? Do you have like a charity that you establish? What's some of the strategies?
So we are, again, outside of politics, but it's not to say that politicians cannot come on board and say, you know, I want to be a volunteer for Alatra International Public Movement. I like their project and some of the, you know, ideas of a creative society I can implement right now. Some of them might take some time and some of them, you know, can go on and on. So there is no like government structure. It's all the power to people. So it's personal responsibility. Whatever you decide to do in a place where you are right now and how you can help our world by establishing those 8 foundations is that's the way it's going to go. And again, right now it's in the informational stage, meaning we're just talking to people and we're having conversations like that. And then at some point it will become more actionable once we have enough, you know, people with right type of talents and right type of ideas working together to bring it all to life. But it can happen very quickly. We just need to strive towards it as one human race.
Great. Thank you. 140 countries. And what is the membership approximately?
You know what? It's interesting because we don't have a sign-up form and we don't count our members. You're just free to come and go. There is not really a count. But I mean, last conference we had in May, we had about 30,000 attending via Zoom. So those are just, you know, some basic numbers, but I really don't know. It's definitely pushing millions. And we do have some silent members that are very supportive of a creative society. They just haven't taken an actionable step to, you know, continue spreading the message. But there's so many people that already know about the Creative Society project.
Well, thank you for doing this work, because it seems that these values are much needed and they're great.
Yes.
We have to go to the questions, personal questions, and this is more the informal part of the interview. So
sure.
I wanted to relax, and we're going to end your night easily. We have some typical questions that we ask. We'd like to know, Olga, the personal story, your personal story after this coronavirus. How did it change your life? What are some of the good things you got from it? What's some of the challenges you had through it?
Well, it was interesting that I came back. I traveled to Ukraine a week before Michigan shut down, and I came back, you know, a week before. And it was interesting because I was coming off vacation with my friends, and then I was going into vacation, but it was a different type of vacation, right? We all kind of were stuck at home. But I am going to say that COVID is, you know, just a horrible, horrible event that could happen to us. But at the same time, a lot of people, you know, died, and it got infected. And who is to say we are not to be infected or haven't been? But at the same time, it also gives us an opportunity as to kind of relook at our life and reevaluate a couple of things that we have been having. So, for example, I have always been working from home since I had my kids, because my priority was to stay with my kids and see them grow. So I was able to manage, you know, running my own business and being with my kids. Now, when the pandemic hit, I did lose some of my clients because they either had to shut down or they were uncertain about even the marketing strategy moving forward or how this is going to affect their businesses. So I was able to, you know, not work my business and just enjoy time with my kids and my husband. Actually, my husband stayed home for the first 2 weeks, and he works at the car dealership. So we actually never see him. And Monday and Thursdays, he's gone from 9 till 9. So it was a very pleasant surprise to see him. And he's been going fishing, and he's been just enjoying his like little retirement in the middle of his 30s. And he had this humongous smile on his face. And one time I told him, like, hey, what did you do? Why are you smiling so weirdly? And he's like, I'm just happy. I'm just happy. And that made me realize that, you know, sometimes we all like to be in this, you know, rat race of 9 till 5 and, you know, what salary I have and what kind of car I drive and what house I live in. But the whole world end up in being in situation, you are where you are and you have what you have, but we all in the same boat. So the same boat, it's no different for me or for someone in Malaysia. We all sitting at home, reevaluating our lives. We can go anywhere. We can do anything. But what we can do is we can spend time with our family, really have conversations that we haven't had. And what we can really do is, you know, play with our kids. Don't just put them on cartoons and, you know, mommy's busy working or mommy's busy doing that, but really sit down with them and, you know, play with them and entertain them as much as we can. Now, I'm lucky enough to live in a house where we can go in the backyard. That's obviously a different situation if someone lives in an apartment building, they're just stuck in the confinement. So there is some creativity that definitely came from this situation that still comes to us. And it's amazing to see that, you know, even on personal front, I was able to, you know, redo my resume that I haven't done in like 5 years because I had time. And I also took some marketing courses to learn inbound marketing or to relearn inbound marketing, because it's always every year I learn something new. So I was able to do some personal and professional development as well. And instead of, you know, complaining, I'm sitting home and we're stuck at home, I felt like I wasn't stuck at home. I was, you know, stuck with my family, and that was the best feeling ever. And, you know, my husband since went to work, and he is working shorter hours right now. And I think we all enjoyed that benefit a little more than we should. But we really like our family time, and, you know, the connection that we really was able to build and still have is, you know, is amazing. And right now the question is whether the kids go back to school or we homeschool. But that's what I love about life, is that we can pivot. We can pivot, we can find out, you know, hey, this wasn't working for us before, or, you know, now I can work from home, or all of a sudden, you know, we can not spend money by going shopping, because I'm sure most people realize that they shopped a little too much when it was available to them. And all of a sudden you didn't have to work 2 jobs and you didn't have to, you know, do that because you had no money to spend anywhere. So it's very interesting. And, you know, we're just waiting for the school to should reopen or give us some kind of heads up of what it's going to be. And at that point, we're just going to adjust, get creative, and move on.
Awesome. So Alex is asking, what are some of the things you are accomplishing staying at home? Is there something that you've accomplished? You know, you mentioned some of the lessons, the courses that you've taken. Is there something else that you're planning to do because of this home situation?
Yes. So like the things I have accomplished, I know like I put some of the things that personally, like for my clients or for someone, but I never actually beefed up my portfolio or I looked at my resume or I redid my LinkedIn profile because I use it to connect to people. But one thing, and going back to, you know, Alatra International Public Movement, what we were able to do is all of a sudden, instead of going and taking interviews in public and taking social surveys in public, we were able to go online. And instead of meeting one person a week and having amazing connection and conversation like we had with you, Wissam, all of a sudden we're meeting, you know, 40 people a month. And now we are like, you know, we were counting how many we met. I think it's like 160 people that we met. And those are 160 different experiences. And those are different conversations we had. And it's so fulfilling to know that there are people around the globe that in the same situation and making the best effort to stay afloat, to pivot, to change, and to go on. So that has been amazing to be able to do those type of, you know, live broadcasts on Facebook and YouTube. And for me, like if you told me 3 months ago that I will be a host on a program that was going live and people will be watching me, I would be like, no, not me. But now it's so natural that I don't even think about it. And it's, you know, another skill that I learned, right, is to be in front of the camera and to be able to communicate with people around the world, because there is so much that unites us. We don't even, you know, have to go to what separates us, because there is much, much more that unites us and brings us all together.
Thank you. Hanan asks, what do you do when you want to heal yourself?
Well, I don't know what you mean by healing myself, but, you know, like mental game needs to be strong any day, but with COVID situation, of course, we have to mentally stay prepared. And basically for me is realizing that I have a choice, and the, you know, the thoughts that are entering into my head might not be the most, you know, positive thoughts, or, you know, might not be the thoughts that I said, I'm going to order that off the menu. So I have a choice to choose, like if I believe my thoughts or if I just say, you know what, that is not true. I'm going to create my own reality. And in my reality, I'm going to have positive thoughts, positive ideas, and we're going to make this world, you know, this creative place that we all can enjoy.
Thank you. Hadi, what is the worst thing COVID-19 pandemic made you discover about yourself?
It made me
challenges, right? Makes you discover some of your weaknesses, and then you work on them.
Yes, definitely. So for COVID, some of the challenges is probably I'm not as organized as I thought I was, because where I am organized is in my work. But when it comes to household and everything, I mean, I'm not as organized as I want to be, but I'm learning that, you know, it's okay. You know, because I cook 3 times a day and I do things, and it seems like it's ongoing tasks. When the kids were in daycare or in school, I didn't have to cook for three times a day. I didn't have to clean up 3 times a day. I didn't have to vacuum as much because now there's so much more traffic. So I'm really learning how to, you know, handle that, because I'm very, very organized in my professional career. Now I'm just bringing it into my household and just making it work.
Awesome. And Talal from Kuwait, he asks the same question, but asking, what's the best thing that you've discovered about yourself through the pandemic?
I think the best thing I discovered through myself is that I don't need to think what other things think of me. And that's what I said. Like, you know, if you told me 4 months ago before pandemic that I will be doing live interviews and I will be going out there and spreading the message that I'm very passionate about, and I really truly believe that the world can be a better place and we deserve it, like, I would be like, no way. Maybe I'll tell it to my best friend. Maybe I'll tell it to someone who is going to think of me, what I'm going to do. But realizing that, you know, it's important not to even consider what other people think of you, because what I do is pure and it comes natural to me and it comes from the heart. It's not a scripted anything. It's just an understanding of the full life that we live, and that, you know, that changes and opportunities, we have to create them ourselves. No one is going to come and, you know, do something for us, or no one is going to come and fix something for us. We as people, you know, and it can be in your household, it can be at work, it can be, you know, in a big organization, or, you know, anywhere. Like, we the people make the change we want to see in the world.
If you were to travel after this pandemic, where would be the first place you would like to go?
I actually would love to go to Singapore, because during the pandemic, I have met about 10 best friends. I call them now best friends, but about 10 people from Singapore. And they were such a light and such a delight. And their country is so beautiful. And it seems like everyone is just a little bit happier, a little bit, you know, a little bit more fulfilled. So I really like to visit Singapore, and I know I will have many places to stay there, and I have so many friends over there already.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country, and it's a really a success story. Within 60 years, they've transformed the country through just transparent and good governance into a haven. And they're doing really well with Corona too.
Yes, they are.
Shireen from New York, she asks, what is one thing that you have already experienced that you feel helped you be most prepared for this situation?
What one thing that you have already experienced that you will help you most be prepared for this situation? You know what? I don't think we can ever be prepared for the situation, but the best thing about being a human being, we have ability to react a certain way. So I think the best thing, I have been doing a lot of personal development, and I think I realized that the power of attention and the time is all we have really as human beings. So if in any situation, just like with COVID, I also had the thoughts of, oh my God, what's going to happen to us? Oh my God. But I didn't let them overpower me. I didn't let any type of, you know, any type of like scarcity type of mindset set in. And it's probably that's what it is. It's just learning to react to situation in certain ways, because it really is important how you react to things, because that reaction is not just, you know, a reaction mentally, it's also like a physical reaction to things, and you can start things in your body that you didn't need to start, like stress and all that. So I think just knowing that I have a choice to react a certain way to situation has really helped me go into this COVID pandemic, or, you know, live through this COVID pandemic, is a mindset of we're going to enjoy every day, and we're going to get, you know, I'm going to get to know my husband, my kids a little bit more, and we're just going to live day by day, and we're just going to have this internal happiness in us, and no one can take that away.
Awesome. Okay, before we go to the final question, we have some of the fun questions, which are the recommendations. So what film do you recommend for our audience? What's the last film you watched? It's probably something you watched with your kids. And what's one that you recommend?
You know what? I have not watched a good movie in a long time. And actually about 2 years ago, I went to the movies with my friend. And I think that was last time I went to the movies, because I was very disappointed. I don't remember the name of it. But when I came out of that movie, it's like something was drained outside of me. I have seen everything from, you know, drugs and, you know, inappropriate behavior and people killing and fear and hate, and everything was combined into that movie. There was like no positive message whatsoever. And I came out thinking, do I want to surround myself with that type of Hollywood story and pay my money to do what? To come out and say, I'm not sure if I want to, you know, ever go back to a movie. So I haven't watched the movie officially in a movie theater. I haven't had, you know, went back to see that. And right now, I really don't have time to watch any movies. And if I do watch any shows, I watch some of the interviews that we take on Alatra TV, and that has become my home because it's really positive, uplifting, and it really is bringing the light into the world that I was looking for. And I find it in other people and their stories.
Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to grow into a generation that are probably going to recommend things on YouTube rather than recommending a film and movies.
Especially, I think so, yes.
Especially with the decline that we've seen through Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, there's every once in a while, there's good works. Books, any book that you recommend?
I really have not read any books lately. The books that really helped me is actually books in a series of Sensei. So it's Sensei 1-4, and it's by the same author that wrote Alatra book, Anastasia Novik. And that book is actually like a fictional story type of book, but it really dives deep into the meaning of life and what it really takes to be a true human being. And I think that book was actually very helpful for me just to become the person I am today. And I'm glad that I still have to grow a little bit more and still work on myself in many areas of my life. But now at least I can recognize that.
Sure. Olga, can you type it for me so I can share it?
Sure.
What type of music you like the best, Olga?
One second. The type of music I listen to, I haven't listened to music in a long time. Wow, I'm strange. The type of music I really like, if I'm dancing to something, it's pop music. And I really enjoy some Russian pop music from back when I was a teenager. That really stuck with me. But I haven't listened to the music even in my car, because sometimes I take my time to actually listen to like a podcast or something educational or a book that, you know, I was reading and I wanted now to listen to it. So it's kind of, I haven't really... You know, I have this love-hate relationship with music, because music really can set you for right mood, but some of the lyrics that I hear on the radio right now, like I wouldn't even turn on the radio for if my kids were in the car.
What is a song that's really stuck with you from your, you know, from the Russian pop movement?
Yeah, we have a lot of songs. I won't say like there's one that stuck, but there is some groups that we have. They were called Ruki Verkh, which means hands up. And so I basically grew up on that music. And I think that's why it's, you know, stuck with me a chord, because it was my kind of like teenage years growing, somewhat adult life. So I think that's why it was really, you know, meaningful.
Awesome. Okay, we will leave you with the final question. Thank you, Olga, for you know, spending that night with us. Probably a little bit late program for you.
That's okay.
The final question. And before I say the final question, I just want to say that we are going to have this episode posted on Dearborn Blog,
awesome.
On Facebook and YouTube. It's also going to be podcasted on Dearborn Blog podcast. On Spotify, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And the next episode we have on Tuesday, 10 p.m. again. We're going to have a guest who is a Tunisian, Jewish, French, American lady. So very interesting experience. We're going to have a conversation with her. And also, there is an upcoming program this Thursday at 7 p.m. about the cancel culture and the threat of cancel culture on free speech. We're going to have a couple of professors speaking about that. Olga, final questions for you, and this question is a reflective question. If you had a magical closet in your bedroom that teleports you to a specific place every time, where would it be?
You know what? Like, some people dream big. I don't dream big. I would not be... I am here for a reason, and I'm for a reason where I am. So I am actually would teleport to my own life and my own body and, you know, and grow where I'm planted, because I truly believe every single person, as far as we know, the grass is not always greener on another side. So I believe that we all here for a reason, and that we all are planted, you know, in our bodies and in our families and in our situations, so we can all grow and develop, and we also can bring the good to this world.
So if you had that magical power, you wouldn't use it. You would make it take you back to your room.
I would just say, take me back, and I got to do dishes because I haven't done them since lunchtime. No one else is going to do it for me.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is the first time we have such an answer in this show. So thank you, Olga. Thank you, our viewers, for listening to this. We are in this together. Keep it up. We're going to go through this, and we're going to come out stronger and better, and hopefully, like Olga and the Creative Society, trying to form a more united humans. Thank you, yes. And good night.
Thank you so much. Good night.